how can we create something that inspires us because it is better than what we have? Can we create a better future? Can we create a climate-stable future?
It's time for conversations about our food and how it's grown on Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.
Sometimes we see, hear, or read something that really affects us. Well, I feel that way about Kiss the Ground, the book, the website, recently the audiobook, and now it's going to be the podcast, too. And I am very happy to have the author of the book and the filmmaker of the documentary, Josh Tickell, with me on Farm to Table Talk. Josh, I'm glad you're here.
Super excited to be here. Thank you for having me, Roger.
You know, it's a pretty big project to simply, write a book or produce a documentary, but then you seem to also kind of want to take on changing the world. So you add that to these other big jobs, and that's really impressive. Tell us a little bit about how Kiss the Ground came to be.
Well, Kiss the Ground is really inspired by a group of people in Los Angeles that have a nonprofit organization called Kiss the Ground. And one of the co-founders of that, Ryland Engelhart, is somebody that I've known for a while. And a number of years back, he came back from a conference in New Zealand, and he was super excited about the potential for soil to sequester carbon dioxide. Not just a little bit of carbon dioxide, but in theory, for the soils of the world, with a bit of work and augmentation to sequester 100% of the carbon dioxide that humanity has emitted into the atmosphere since the birth of the Industrial Revolution. That's not a small number. That's like 1,000 gigatons. That's 1,000 billion tons of CO2. Now, you know, you got to put all of this in perspective. This conversation happened almost five, six, 7 years ago now. And climate change, it was a topic, a hot topic, but no one was looking for a solution to climate change. So we've been on a bandwagon, and we still are on a bandwagon globally as a people, that climate change is a problem, and it is rather unsolvable, and we should be vexed about it and you know, filled with angst and anxiety and fear for the future. But very little energy has been put toward actually solving that problem, genuinely solving it. And so here comes my friend Ryland from the conference. My God, there's a solution to climate change. We should all jump on board. I thought he was kind of crazy, but I have spent many years working in and around the agricultural industry in the United States. I worked indirectly for the National Soy Growers, worked indirectly for National Corn Growers Association. So I remember a group of studies where they were measuring net carbon in the soil, and they were showing higher net carbon going into the soil than was coming out. And I thought, maybe there's something to this. So Ryland just kept banging on the door, you've got to make a movie, 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 you've got to make a movie. Finally, I said, look, we'll make a trailer, and if people are interested, then we'll get a movie going. So Rebecca, who's my wife and my co-directing, co-producing partner, we put together a trailer with Ryland and the Kiss the Ground team, showed it at a few conferences. People went crazy. Funders showed up, investors. They wanted to make a documentary. We said, okay, we'll make a documentary. But the challenge has always been and continues to be, how do you make something that is inherently not necessarily interesting, dirt, soil, how do you make that compelling enough to sit through a 90-minute movie or read a book or listen to an audiobook? And so that's been our challenge. The information has not been our challenge. The science has not been our challenge. The reality of the factual, empirical data is that, yes, the greatest problem to humanity, i.e. the warming planet and the changing climate, probably, you know, with some certainty, has a very simple solution. Now, how do we convert people mentally? How do we get them to make the leap from problem into solution, from soil being something boring to soil being something sexy? Well, that's the subject of the rest of our conversation, I think, in one way or another.
So you decided to start on this journey. So you said, okay, fine, let's go do a documentary. And I suppose there's some business angles to this. Do you need to get some people to back it, that believe in it enough that that they are going to help support your producing this film?
Yes, and sadly with documentaries, there's absolutely no relationship between the amount of money you put into a film and the amount of money you get out of a film.
Sure.
So it's largely a philanthropic adventure for those who put their money into it, and so you're largely begging for money to get something like this to happen. And that takes a tremendous amount of time and energy. I would say as much time and energy as making the film itself.
But making the film itself, you started identifying what? A list of all the people and all the areas that you should visit to be able to get this story. I'm sure you had a lot of suggestions. But you go all over the United States and you're drawing information from all over the world. But you went all over the United States and... In fact, I just listened to the audiobook, which, by the way, I loved the audiobook. It really connected, and you read it. I read the book, and then I did the audiobook. The audiobook really connected, and before I got on this call with you, I went back through and just kind of listened to the beginning of every chapter of the audiobook, and it just reminded me, you were hopscotching all over the United States. You were north and south and Bismarck and, you know, all over the place. I mean, that takes a lot of organization, too. You know, everybody's suggesting to you, you got to go see these people, you got to see these people. I can't imagine that you got to spend much time at home.
Yeah, the vast majority of the past 2 years was on the road. And there was France in there, and there were trips to other countries that didn't even make the book or the movie. So, and people are still sending requests. Can you come here? Can you visit this? Can you do that? Can we do a story on this? The amount of time and energy that we spent on the road to get those, capture those stories was nothing short of tremendous. But at the end of the day, and not even, you know, not even everybody's story in the United States made it, but what we did do is we distilled what is the essence of this movement called regenerative agriculture, who are the people who can really carry that story and illustrate it in a way that a quote-unquote average audience member can get. And then we met people like Gabe Brown in North Dakota, who's now kind of become a regenerative rancher rock star. You know, he is the go-to guy now. And when we spoke to him and we first interviewed him, he was not as popular. So obviously the subject's gaining popularity, which is great.
You know, and people like Gabe Brown, one of the things that I really like is that he's got scale, too. I mean, one of the things that people criticize the movement for is that they say, well, okay, fine, but they're talking about what they can do in a relatively small acreage, which, you know, I know we can make the point that that all adds up and that matters. But Gabe Brown is you know, commercial size enterprise, and he'll put his books beside anybody, and show that it works.
Yeah, Gabe is a great example. He now works with Ray Archuleta, who was also somebody profiled in the book, who worked for the NRCS, the Natural Resources Conservation Service, for over 30 years. They work together. They're setting up an international soil education network and soil consultancy. And I think in a very short period of time, they're going to be able to prove millions of acres that this works on not just Gabe's farm, which is 5,000 acres, but literally millions of acres of farm and ranch land through the United States, through Mexico, and into other countries.
Well, I was going to say, you also went to Rodale, didn't you?
Yes.
And they have a really long program on track where they've got one, you know, right side by side, some fairly large acreage, some done conventional and some done, I think, more for regenerative agriculture. And their records go back, what, 30, 40 years now?
Easily. And Rodale is, you know, part of an ecosystem, excuse the pun, of information and knowledge that shows over and over again that, you know, it doesn't take a genius to figure this out. The soil is the basis of nutrition. The soil is the basis, therefore, of what's going on in our guts, what's going on in our bodies, our health. And, you know, because it is literally the skin of the earth, it is largely the basis of climate stability. So, you know, as above, so below, as we see, you know, our survival, our survivability on the planet as an issue, as we come together as a species to kind of look at this, slowly but surely we're connecting, oh, the sky is connected to the ground and our bodies are connected to the ground. And if we want to deal with human health and we want to deal with ecological health, we've got to go to the root, literally, of the issue, which is the soil.
You know, Josh, I'm wondering how this took place, because you get a list, you know you're going to do this, you're taking on the project, and you know, get a plane ticket and you're heading to Bismarck or somewhere in Pennsylvania or wherever else. And so describe that process to me. You know where you're going. Are you sitting on the plane? Are you taking a nap? Or are you doing research on who you're going to go see? And you hit the ground and you have them show you around. Describe that process a little bit.
Well, for a film, we make the film three times. We make the film in pre-production, we make the film when we film it, and we make the film when we edit it. And so in pre-production, we have these walls that are just pinned with people's pictures and a little bit of information, and we have to decide who we go see, and sometimes that's based on self-selection. Like, we'll think, oh my gosh, this character is going to be amazing, we've got to go interview them. And we call them up, we tell them what we're doing. Oh, we had a film crew from Germany last week. We're done with film crews. Don't come here. Okay, well, I guess they're not going to be in our movie. But we knew that after speaking with a couple of the different people, like, we knew the Markagards, which are this wonderful family. They ranch on the central coast of California. They ranch regeneratively, meaning they're always regenerating the soil where their cattle have been. We knew we wanted to spend time with them. We wanted to be intimately familiar with their family, because, let's face it, cows, soil, not that interesting in terms of characters, but a family that looks like the cover of a Land's End catalog, that's actually like out on horses like Bonanza, and that are teaching their kids that, in modern day America, that's interesting. So, you know, with those characters, we spend as much time as we can researching them. If they've got a book, we read the book. If they've got podcasts or blogs, or we get any and all information. And so the answer is, if I'm on a plane, I'm reading the author's book before we get there, and doing whatever we can to get every little piece of information to be able to effectively have them tell their own story. My objective is not to tell the story. My objective is always to have them tell their own story.
Well, I got to go back and say, the way you told the story when you are reading the audiobook, that really stood out when you saw that family. You could really hear the passion that you had for them, and they were really affecting you. You could hear it in your voice. And that's why I was wondering about that process. And I'm wondering.
They're beautiful people. The Markagards are beautiful people. So many. What makes the book and the audiobook and soon the movie when it comes out, what makes these experiences fun is not anything we did or didn't do on the storytelling end, but rather the people and their passion, their heart, their energy, and their knowledge. Many of these people have spent their lives dedicated to soil restoration. You go, wow, you spent your life, you know, dedicated to dirt? All right, maybe there's something here, because this is not a cult. You know, there's got to be more to it than just dirt, and there is.
When you show up and they're taking you up in the pickup truck up to their place, are you writing things down in a notebook? Are you recording it? Do you have people that are shooting some raw footage just as you go that you're going to start piecing together? I'm curious on that process a little bit.
Yeah, most authors will have an audio recorder, and they'll record, you know, audio-wise everything that happens. We, because we're making a film, filmed everything. So there's 1,000 hours of footage, approximately, that is now 83 minutes of film on the timeline. But part of the how we got from 1,000 hours to 83 minutes, the book was the vehicle to get the movie done. So the editors were just lost in this sea of footage, and by no fault of their own, there was a lot of footage.
Yeah.
So I started to take the transcripts and highlight them and pull pieces and put them together with commentary from me. And basically what I ended up with was 10 chapters, each with transcribed footage that we'd taken, taking the audio and literally writing it out, and then highlighting those pieces and saying, this sentence or these sentences are the most important piece. This really illustrates what we're trying to say, and summarizing it for them. And once those 10 chapters were kind of done, it was kind of a book. So from there to printing, you know.
So it was in the process, really, of getting ready to do the film that the book came together, because it's kind of the notes you needed to do anyway when you're out talking to everybody, and you could publish the book.
Exactly. It's the gussied up notes for the editors. It really is.
And then how long is the film?
The film is currently, in its current incarnation, it's 83 minutes. I imagine with credits and, you know, logo splashes, it'll be about 85 minutes when we're done.
So, I mean, that's kind of a magic number, isn't it, for documentaries, that's somewhere around 80? But
people, you know, I think, look, the reality is I can tell you the entire contents of the film. Soil can sequester 100% of the carbon dioxide that humanity put into the atmosphere, and it's a no-brainer, and we should do it because it stabilizes the climate and produces more food. There
yeah,
you go.
There
I told
you, go.
You the whole movie.
Perfect.
I blew it.
No. They got to see it. And, you know, you caught me, because I was talking about the film, and I obviously was talking about the trailer, because you're still in the editing. I was impressed with the trailer and all the photography and all these other stories and reading the book and everything. So get back to the timetable then. When would people be able to see the film broadly, do you think?
We are hoping that the film releases this year, and it's a big release on digital platforms. So if all goes well, the film should be out late summer, early fall 2019.
And you have a lot of people that are jumping on the bandwagon. You had the new governor of California, you know, made a comment on your jacket cover. And there's a lot of folks. I suppose you're going to try to get everybody out there to, when you start promoting the film, get these people to draw attention to it again.
Absolutely. Governor Newsom, we were fortunate enough to be able to interview him in the film. He's actually in the movie, which is cool. Obviously, we didn't know he was going to be governor at the time, but it's nice, you know. I compare that to having, you know, look, Arnold Schwarzenegger was a movie star. He was governor of California, so I'd say we've got somebody who's at least got the star power of Schwarzenegger in there. But yeah, we'll circle the wagons once the film is done and have everybody host screenings and beat the drum and get the international focus, I think, will be very important once the movie gets out. Because all of this has been English language based, but this is an international movement. If you look at the planet, we have 5 billion hectares of cultivable land. 3.5 billion of those hectares are rangeland, meaning animal land. Most of that 3.5 billion isn't even suitable for crops. So you're like, what's the potential? The potential's huge. The potential is literally to stabilize regions, to stabilize ecosystems, and to reinvigorate local economies globally. So I think the international push will be very important. Be very important to get the movie translated into as many languages as possible, and get it out there in front of as many people as possible.
You know, I don't know if you've thought about this, but California really has to be taking the lead now on climate change in place of the United States. that our current policy is to pull out of the Paris Accords, but it doesn't really happen for a couple more years, potentially. But in the meantime, there's a lot of stuff going on in California. I wonder if you've thought about the fact that you are a film producer in California and at a time where California is trying to step up and provide leadership and draw people's attention to these things that need to happen.
Well, I would say the issue is as close to home as possible. My family and I evacuated from the Thomas Fire, which surrounded our home in Ojai, California.
Sure.
The fire was about 1,500 feet from our house. There was a 150-foot wall of flame. And, subsequent years, here we're seeing at the end of each year, the frequency and the size of fires are getting much larger. And I have a document from NASA that was produced in the late 1980s. And the NASA document is tracking carbon dioxide against frequency and size of fires. And it says, very simply, as carbon dioxide increases in the atmosphere, fires will increase in frequency and size. And it specifically lists California, it lists several other states which are experiencing this now. And we knew this information 30 years ago. It is not rocket science, even though the rocket scientists were the ones pointing it out. But if areas like California do not take a lead in climate policy, we are going to be at the lead of climate impacts. So I think California is in a unique position because it is a financial giant, because it is the largest gross receipts agriculture producer in the nation, and because it is a net exporter of money into the United States. We're in a lucrative position to say, okay, look, we know that we are at the forefront of climate impacts. Let's make some very bold policies around this. Whereas if you look at something like the Maldives, the group of islands, or Vanuatu, these places in the South Pacific, these are financially distressed places that don't have that ability to say, look, we're a global leader. We can affect policy everywhere. So I think California is in an absolutely unique position. I have high hopes for Governor Newsom. I hope that he can cut through the bureaucracy and the backlash, which is inevitable. This is not a Democratic state only. It is very split. He's going to face a tremendous amount of resistance, to any environmental policy that he puts out there. Just not because it's environmental, because people will label it as a Democratic policy, which is not. If we want our children to survive, we need to be looking at these issues, not from a partisan perspective. I have hope that he can break through and make some of these things happen.
I had no idea when I asked you that question that it was going to come so literally so close to you, that the fire was that close to where you and your family live and its implications from, climate change. And it reminds me of another thing, though, too. It's become kind of a political issue of whether or not some people can accept climate change or global warming. But and they may feel compelled to talk about it in different ways. Such as, the weather is definitely changing, and humans may have an effect on it. So I keep thinking there must be a way to get everybody on board and get this out into another position so that it's not so polarizing. You kind of do that with the way this book is set up. I mean, Kiss the Ground doesn't beat everybody over the head on climate change per se. I mean, It's a respect. It's important to pay attention to building up the soils, but I'm wondering if you've ever thought of this as a good on ramp for people that are trying to find a way they can on board with this movement and be a part of it.
We tried to make the book and the forthcoming film as neutral as possible, without being completely acquiescent. I think you need to point out certain things to be honest and say, look, the United States kind of, look, everybody says, well, President Trump pulled out of the Paris Accord. The reality is the United States was botching the Paris Accord as we went into the Paris Accord. We were backstepping, we were sidestepping, we were backstabbing in some ways other countries which were trying to do good things there. So I don't think you can do partisan blame and say, look, this president is not as good as this other president on this issue. I think we're not a great country when it comes to science. I think we fear science in the United States. We fear things that we do not understand. We have one of the worst science education programs in the developed world. And it doesn't take a genius to say, well, if you don't educate people well in the sciences, they are not going to understand that realm of human thought and reality, and they will replace it with mysticism and fear. You know, this is evident in the United States. So I don't think climate change, when you really get out into the Midwest and you talk to people and you say, listen, let's not talk about climate change. Let's talk about your crops over the past 10 or 20 years. Do you notice a difference in productivity and weather pattern? Oh, yeah, absolutely. There's no question, right? So we're localists. We focus on what we can see and touch and smell and taste just because of the way our brains are wired. And where our disability as a country is large-scale, big-picture science thinking because we're not educated there. But we're smart enough on a local level to agree that, yes, crops are being threatened from weather. That is a very simple statement, you know, and that should go to the core of what everybody's thinking about, food. Food security is national security. There is no other form of national security. Most wars are fought around food. Food is the central issue of our civilization. So if we don't have food security because we don't have climate security, I don't care what side of the political line you find yourself on, that is the central issue of humanity. So this is a human issue. It's not a political issue at all.
Well, and I guess just one more thing, and I want to wrap it up and hope I can ask you back for another conversation. And that is, when you look at this, there are so many people that are coming out reports of how pretty pessimistic. And I don't know anyone that has plunged into this any more than Josh Tickell. And I'm wondering, Josh, in this, several years that you've been immersed in this project and the book and the movie still coming, you've been immersed in it. How has it changed you? Or maybe another way of saying this is, what gives you some reason for optimism or hope about the future?
Well, you know, if you take a look at the trajectory of everything that I have been involved in since getting out of school, all of it's been related in one shape or form to in the environment or to social issues of one kind or another, whether it's movies or books or journalism, all of it. The easy pathway is to look at the negative and to say, well, you know, given the facts and information, things don't look too positive. You know, the future is a little bit bleak. The reality is I've personally come to a very metaphysical, maybe even, you might even say spiritual, kind of perspective on all of this. But it's still based in science. You know, consider this. Your body is about 50% microbes. Microbes. Not human cells, microbes. Mm-hmm. Those microbes, many of them date back to the inception of life on this planet. So you will travel with these microbes for a given period of time. You will live. You will die. Those microbes will split. They will move on, and they will move on, and they will move on. So, in other words, there is a continuum of life on this planet. And regardless of how hard we as a species try to mess things up, life will continue in some way, shape, or form. Will consciousness continue? Will humanity continue? Will we have great works of art that humans created 500 years from now because we made it through this period of time? I don't know. And I'm not sure that it's critical. not to say that, you know, I think that humans should extinguish themselves and that we're not a great species and that we shouldn't work for the betterment of all people. But on a deeply metaphysical level, I think the greater challenge for us as a species is not to go, well, the future is bad, the future is good, but to look for how can we create something that inspires us because it is better than what we have. Can we create a better future? Can we create a climate-stable future? Can we really begin to understand biology and to be a part of that symphony versus a piece of the discord? Because I think that would provide an amazing future for so many people. And that's inspiring. That's exciting.
No, it is inspiring. And in fact, I want to point out to people listening to the podcast that you can rewind that and go back and listen to what you just said, because I think it needs to soak in. You said it very, very well. And I would like to have you come back sometime, if you're willing, and we'll talk a little bit more about what we can do, what individuals can do, and take it to the next stage. But in the meantime, Josh Tickell, I really appreciate your being on Farm to Table Talk, and I suppose people that haven't read your book yet can find it at all the places that you get books, and if they listen to audiobooks, again, I'm promoting the audiobook side. I think they should download it and give it a listen. Check out the website. I really appreciate your being on Farm to Table Talk.
Roger, love being here, and yes, let's do another one. And folks at home can connect to the nonprofit, kisstheground.com. They can connect with us on Facebook. There is so many great actions that are happening through all of the soil nonprofits, largely being organized through Facebook and other social media.
You've been listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson. If you like what you hear, go to farmtotabletalk.com and follow us on Facebook and Twitter, or go to iTunes to subscribe and give us a review and a rating. Thanks for listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.